welcome everyone to another, well, I wouldn't say fantastic, stupendous, or out of this world, but I'd say a lot better than mediocre show.
There you go.
I am Bill Carnes, my co-host Dave Champion. Together we are
totally unprepared.
Welcome to episode, I think we're on 15 now.
Already?
Can you believe it?
How time flies.
Been almost 4 months.
Yeah,
how about that? And we have a very interesting topic we're going to get to, where we're going to start the show off with. Now, keep with us. Stick with the entire topic. Stick with the entire segment so you can see where we're going. You might be shocked when I turn it over to Dave in just a minute here, but stick with the entire thing. It's part of the discussion as a whole. So, Dave, what's up, my nigga?
No, it's great. All right, which brings us to the topic.
Yes, it does. Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard. Fox Network has a very successful show now called Empire. It's the number one rated dramatic series on television right now. And one of the main stars is Terrence Howard. And
I have to say, I'm a fan.
Okay.
I became a big fan. He did a movie called Hustle and Flow.
Uh-huh.
And a very interesting movie, but just the way that he acted and handled a lot of situations in there, I thought was a pretty good role. He's done a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, he has done good stuff.
Yeah.
He's a face that everybody recognizes. Even if they don't know his name, he's a face that everybody recognizes.
Sure.
And because he is now this big star in this top-rated TV series, he was interviewed by one of the big entertainment publications. And the topic that caught my attention and that Bill and I decided to talk about today was a dialogue where he was asked in the article what he thinks of the use of the word nigga on television. Now, I want to be clear. I need to draw the same distinction that Terrence Howard drew in the article, which is we are talking about the word that ends in A, not the word that ends in ER. Okay. Now, Bill, you probably caught on to this distinction several years back.
Many tears, okay. Yeah.
And at the time, I thought, well, that's sort of a cheesy distinction, right?
As did I.
But it seems to make all the difference, okay? Now, I can say that I have the actual word nigger with an R on the end. I couldn't tell you the last time I, other than doing a show, I cannot tell you the last time I used that word. However, living in America in the new millennium, I mean, we hear the word nigga all the time.
Regularly, especially if you listen to music.
There you go. And there's a lot of expressions you use to introduce this topic. You know, what's up, my nigga? There's an expression like when you think somebody's like, you know, full of it, you know, nigga, please. You know, and it's always N-I-G-G-A. Now, Terrence Howard made the statement that he believes that word, it's the one thing that happens a lot in society that never gets portrayed on television. And he said he thinks that's wrong. He thinks that if it's used in real life, it should be used on television. One of his co-workers, one of his acting peers on the show, said she completely disagrees and she thinks the word should be just gone. Okay.
And if I may, that's empowering the word, especially in its original form with an ER at the end.
Yes.
That's allowing that word to change dialogue, mm-hmm. to absolutely flip the script on any discussion that's going on, and really to empower that word. You might be very well aware that a few years ago now, the NAACP actually held a memorial service for that word ending in ER, for nigger, to never be used again. They actually held a real-life memorial service, you know, dead and buried, never to be used again.
I was not aware of that.
Yes, it happened, I don't know, a few years ago now. But when we're getting into more of the slang version of it,
mm-hmm.
and keep in mind, I really see this as more of a societal thing where you come from, your speech patterns.
Cultural.
Cultural, really cultural, yes, thank you. There's a movie out that Jamie Foxx is in called Django Unchained.
Yes.
And it's about a three-hour movie. And, of course, the word is thrown out around constantly because it's during slave time.
But that's ER.
I understand.
Yes.
However, if you listen to the pronunciation of the word,
mm-hmm.
by the actors in that movie who are black, it's almost consistently ended with an A at the end.
Mm.
So this is a newer distinction that's come around, you know, obviously within our latest generation. And it's to, as I can see it, to really de-emphasize the hurt involved with an ER at the end, to make it kind of an acceptable version when we're talking about, like, saying, hey, pal, hey, buddy.
Right, right. Now, you remember, Several years ago when I was still doing the radio show, I talked about the original word nigger. And I said, this word needs to be disempowered.
I remember that show well, actually.
And one of the things I did, because this was several years ago, and for a white person to say that word was just beyond, people couldn't even imagine. And on the show, I said, the way to disempower this word is to render it meaningless. So on the radio show, I got into my microphone and I said, nigger, 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 just to make the point, it's meaningless. It's a freaking word. It's sounds you make with your tongue against your teeth and your lips. It's meaningless if we want it to be meaningless. Now, so now we have this new permutation which does not carry that same condemnatory distinction.
Sure.
Okay. Ending in an A. So where do you come down on Terrence Howard's position? It should or should not be brought into the mainstream via television?
It's not a simple answer for me. Really, I think that the original form of the word, the one that causes so much hate and discontent going on, the founding of the word back during the slave trade, which actually was generally blacks who were kidnapping and selling other blacks to white settlers in the new America, the new world, slave traders, that were using that as their description, and it carried on through. And that's really the harm behind the word. So therefore, the idea behind what the NAACP did with ending and basically having a burial service for the word.
Can I interrupt you for one quick
second?
Just to make a point, we'll get right back to that. Americans tend to see slavery as an American issue.
Yeah, and it's not. It's a world issue.
Worldwide issue. Okay, carry
on. As a matter of fact, it ended here some time ago, and we have 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments to prove it. But it still goes on in many areas around the world. As a matter of fact, a guy that I know was in Iraq back in the late 60s, mm-hmm. Working for the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. And in Baghdad, there were various areas around town you could go and just buy human beings.
Right.
This is during your lifetime and mine.
And there are certain imams within Islam who say that slavery is acceptable, just like in the pre-antebellum South, there were Christian pastors who would preach from the pulpit that holding blacks in slavery in America was God's will. So there's always a religious angle to this as well.
You can imagine.
But your point was, I'm sorry I interrupted.
Thankfully,
you.
We've moved past all of that.
Yes.
My thought on the whole use of the word is, we probably ought to should have not be using it anywhere in society. However, I understand from Terrence Howard's point of view, if it's used so commonly, let's actually disempower it and let's allow it to be common. Let's make this distinction and allow it to be okay. Allow this to be okay within society, but let's make the distinction. Mm-hmm. This is what we're doing. We're changing the word. We're having an A at the end rather than an ER. We're taking the power away from it. I'm not exactly a fan. I don't want to see one of my daughters come home and say, "Hey, Dad, what's up, my nigga?" Yeah, it's like and who knows, that day may come around.
Right, right.
But it's like, you know, I wouldn't think that we're using words like, you know, text and Google and this, that, and the other. You know, 15 years ago, these were a lot of words that, these were things that didn't exist just 15
Correct.
Years ago. And, but you know, I mean, now we can have a whole discussion on things that 15 years ago would have made nothing.
And tell her to call you and say that.
There you go.
But on the other side of the coin, you know, oftentimes when you pick up the phone and it's me, I'll speak in another language or something. You know,
sure.
It probably wouldn't even phase you if you saw my name on your cell phone. You said, "Yo, what's up, Dave?" And I said, "What's up, my nigga?" You probably would be like, "Hey, Dave."
Right.
It'd be meaningless to you.
Right.
Okay. Other than just a fun greeting. And Terrence Howard said in the article that he uses it with his white friends every day. He says he calls them up on the phone and they answer the phone and he says, "What's up, my nigga?" And that was his point, that it is that commonplace for certain people. And I agree with you in that. I think what's driving it is what happened when we outlawed alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The crime soared and alcohol poisoning and
right.
people getting drunk just went right. off the friggin' chart.
Is it possible that within a certain cultural view, using it is considered kind of edgy because it's not generally socially acceptable.
I would, because I tell you this, Terrence Howard could call a white friend and use that.
Yeah.
But if a white friend called him...
He says they do, and he's cool.
However,
okay.
I'm saying if he had not opened the gate to that,
okay.
And just it wasn't used between he and some white friends,
yeah.
And a white friend just called up one day and called him up and said, what's up, my nigga? He'd probably set him back a little bit. So it's one of these things that's it's very delicate, and I really understand why,
mm-hmm.
especially in the black community. I really get this,
mm-hmm.
Why this... It's like you hear that it's acceptable in the black community, but it's not acceptable in the white community for whites to ever use it. I think Terrence Howard is trying to bridge that gap by saying, look, you're saying that it's okay here, but it's not okay there. Let's just disempower the word.
Yes.
But I still don't see it as incredibly acceptable.
Here's what
I
think.
Again, it's in its infancy when it comes to this discussion.
Here's what I think is going to happen. You're old enough to remember when every conversation with another guy started with the word dude. Okay, it was very trendy at a particular time.
Yes.
And then one that I found particularly obnoxious was bro. There was a phase where everybody was bro.
I'm not your effing bro.
Exactly. Okay, every young guy, young guys that I'd never seen in my life would walk up to me, like in a restaurant, we'd be trying to get, oh, hey man, sorry about that, bro. Oh, what? And that's gone now. Okay,
thank God.
Yeah, no lie. I got over it. I realized it was no different than dude or anything else. But at first, you and I both. Yeah, at first it was a little. I bristled a bit. But I think the same thing is going to happen if we take nigga and we introduce it into the mainstream.
You think it'll run its course?
Yes, it's going to be just like dude, just like bro. Once the facade of it being edgy and, you know, I'm doing something that's not permissible, you know.
It'll be replaced with something like, you know, rain jacket. What's up, rain jacket?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Knows?
And that's I think, one of the reasons that I've been a big advocate of getting the word out into the open is that once it loses that lack of permissiveness, that societal edginess, I think it'll, in time, in not a very great amount of time either. I think it's just going to fade away.
Time will tell.
All right. Stay with us. We'll be back for my rant. Don't go away. And we are back. And it's time for... What is up with people being concerned so... terribly concerned about the shifting demographics in America. This came to mind for me this morning as I was reading an article that Google is now providing funding for something called Code 2040, which is a program designed to bring minorities into the high-tech industry. Typically, the high-tech industry in this country has been populated predominantly by whites. If you were to walk into the headquarters of Google and you go to the techie department, you're going to see predominantly, not all, predominantly a bunch of white geeky tech guys working away. Now, the demographics of the United States is shifting. This is not arguable. The reason that Code 2040 was, they adopted that name is by 2040, I think it's actually that the real date is 2039, people who project these things are saying that the United States at that point, 50+% I think it's actually like 50.2% come 1939 if the number, I'm sorry, 2039, if the numbers hold, by that year, more than half of Americans will no longer be white descendants of Europeans. And I have had some people bring this up to me and with great consternation. And of course, everyone who brings it up to me, as you can imagine, is white. And it seems like there's some issue with, well, you know, I'm white and my team isn't going to be the majority anymore. And I'm a little bit baffled, but then I do admit I tend to look at things from the broader perspective of history. The fact that Dave Champion, as a Caucasian person in America, is a member of the majority today, and in 2039, I will no longer be the majority, it doesn't faze me in the least. I could care less. However, there are people that are just seriously bent out of shape about this. Now, the race component baffles me. I guess there are people who are invested in the color of their skin at birth. You know, I'm a white guy. White people rule. You know, I'm a Hispanic guy. Hispanic people need to rule. The whole race thing is we're all human beings, right? And I know that sounds trite. It almost sounds like, you know, like a Walt Disney theme. You know, well, we're all human beings. But I don't see another way to actually function in the world. To get all bent out of shape over skin color, whether I'm bent out of shape with favoritism and, you know, waving the pom-poms for white people or disliking somebody of another race, what I'm significantly more, well, I'd have to be more concerned because I'm not concerned with skin color in the least. So what I'm significantly more concerned about is not who is going to be the majority in America come 2039. What I'm concerned about is how they are going to conduct themselves. Now, that's what I think a lot of white people are concerned about, because in their mind, only white people are good and decent and intelligent and hardworking and all of those things, which happens to be convenient to think that way if you're white. I believe that anybody can be anything they want to be if they choose to be. Now, it's funny because people grow up and, you know, sometimes they're wild teenagers and, you know, they sort of thumb their nose at the system and, you know, some of them say, I'm never going to get locked down into that whole, you know, marriage and kids and, you know, I'm going to travel and be free and this and that. They say this when they're like 17, right? And then by the time they're 32, they're married, they've got a mortgage, they've got six car payments, they've got three kids already and they're struggling and they bought into the whole thing. So the point is, people sometimes begin at one play. Actually, I think it's the rule more than the exception. They start out with one mindset and they end up someplace completely different. So the fact that today people might look at certain segments of minority populations and say, well, I don't like what I'm seeing there. Well, you know what? Those folks, whether they're white, Hispanic, black, there's always been knuckleheads. There's always been people who are not going to sit in the corporate offices. When America was like 98% white, there were always people who could never sit in the corporate office because they didn't have what it took. Okay, they were knuckleheads. A less generous term might be losers. Okay, they've always been with us. So what I'm concerned about is, as the demographic shifts, I'm not concerned that I'm going to be in the 40 percentile rather than the 60 percentile. I could care less. What I'm concerned about is whoever of whatever race is in the driver's seat, whether it's the corporate driver's seat or the government or political driver's seat, that they are right-minded and doing the right thing. And of course, the funny thing is, whether you talk to somebody who's, say, a member of the Republican Party, or you talk to somebody who's a member of the Democrat Party, or anywhere in between, and you ask them, don't you want these people in 2040 to be right-minded? You're going to get a resounding unanimous yes, and they all think the right thing is something different. So, Bill, what do you think about these changing demographics, and where should people's concern and interest lie?
I think the concern and interest really belongs elsewhere. I really do. I hate the term race anyhow. I've talked about it on the show. There's one race. It's the human race. It's the color of your skin. It's cultural differences. It's where you come from historically, with your background. If your DNA is slightly different, we're still all humans. We can all still mate and create new humans, right?
Right.
So, and it's interesting you say this, that the Google's Project 2040 is, they're saying that 49.8% of America will be white, yeah, and 50.2% will be other than white.
Yes.
Whites will still be more than any other individual skin color, but they just won't be more than half of everybody in the country.
Right. And that's
because the other 50.2 will be made up of everybody else.
And I believe that's supposed to change sometime approaching 2070.
Okay, and I'm sure I'll be 101 years old by then. You know,
we're going to be around, right?
So really, the problem that I see is that by the time 2040 rolls around, this country is going to be so far in the toilet, it's not going to matter. It really is. And I'm going to take this onto a political spectrum. The last great president who stood up for actual individual rights to any extent was Ronald Reagan.
True.
And from there, we had Bush 1, who was a member of the Globalist Party, got us involved in Agenda 21 and all kinds of other horrible globalist-related things. Then we bring in Bill Clinton, another member of the Globalist Party.
And we should point out, Republican and Democrats,
right,
respectively.
Same thing.
Right.
And then we go back to another Republican, George Bush Jr., another Globalist Party member. Then we get into Barack Obama.
Sock puppet.
Yeah. Then we get into Barack Obama, who's working for the same globalist entity scumbags. And I got to tell you, if we end up with Clinton v. Bush 2.0, I'm probably going to end up offing myself. Not literally. I'm just saying. That's globalists versus other globalists. And I actually put a post on, on social media recently asking, okay, you got Bush, you got Clinton, Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton. Are they different? If they each served one or two terms as president, at the end of which, what is the difference in how the, what status would the country be in that would be different? If Bush had it for 8 years, if Clinton had it for 8 years, at the end of those years, how different would the country be between the two? And the answer is it wouldn't.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, so we've got all these globalist minds that are out there that are really running this country into the commode. And unfortunately, we have a lot of stupid people following along. Probably the same stupid people that are concerned about who the majority is going to be in 2040.
That was a huge understatement, by the way.
It's ridiculous. I saw recently somebody who's doing like an interview on the streets thing, but they're at the beach. It was, I think, a spring break thing down in Florida. And this guy's asking questions like, you know, who bombed Pearl Harbor in World War II?
Mark Dice, I believe.
And they didn't know.
He does great work.
He has all this various basic information. You know, when was the Vietnam War? You know, what era was it? Things like that most people should ought to know. But they didn't. These are supposed to be people being educated.
He asked them to sign a petition, on another occasion, to sign a petition to do away with the Bill of Rights.
Yes.
And people were signing.
Yeah. They did ridiculous things. Anyhow, my point is when you have people that are really that big of dolts that are out there, that are concerned about, well, you know, percentages based on skin color here and there, quite honestly, I'd be happy if they didn't even publish those things. I think that when the government goes in and they ask you, this is what I've been doing for years now. It says race, and they've got all these different boxes, and white is in one of two places. It's either first or it's dead last. It's nowhere's mixed up. It's bookended one end or the other. Then it says other, and it's got a line. Every single time, and I challenge everybody out there to do this, and I challenge you to challenge everyone you know to do this, click other and write human.
There you go.
There's one race. And for people to be, and when the government starts collecting all this information, my response is to, look, we're all supposed to live by the same set of rules. All men are created equal. We've now set the laws to do that. We've amended the Constitution to do that. Let's live that way.
Yeah. Years ago when I lived in California, I dated a gal who was mulatto. And her dad was a trip. And
so she was Mulattanese?
Half black, half white, Bill. And so her dad, which was the black half, he was a trip. And he used to tell me, he said, when she was young and I used to take her to sign her up at school, you know, she'd go from like, you know, nursery school to elementary school to junior high, and he'd go to sign her up at school, they would always want to know the race. And he said, I don't know. He's her father. He said, I don't know. You pick one. And that was his way of doing exactly what you're talking about, fighting back. He's like, you know, it's rare. It's such a rare occasion to find somebody of any race that just eschews the whole race issue.
Oh, yeah.
And he was very cool in that regard. He wanted nothing to do with it. You know, he's like, my skin's black, your skin's white. We all bleed the same red. And he refused to give any government official his race or his daughter's race. He said, you choose. I thought that was great.
You know, there was an interview that Oprah Winfrey did somewhat recently with a young black woman. And I forget what show she used to be on years ago. Very pretty young lady. Very pretty young. And they were having this discussion. And in the discussion, she said, look, I don't identify myself as an African American. I identify myself as an American.
Rare.
I believe that all of these discussions based on skin color are ridiculous. And I refuse to identify myself as African-American. And Oprah's response was leaning back and said, oh, girl, you know you're going to catch flack for that. And she says, but why should I? Why should I catch flack for that? I'm an American. I haven't traced my ancestry back. As a matter of fact, my girlfriend recently did one of those DNA tests. Mm-hmm. And my mother did one as well.
And your girlfriend and, visually is like the ultimate white girl.
Oh, yeah. But she came back, actually, between French and Indonesian were the two big ones. Imagine that. And my mother did one. So I know that side. And it comes back with what percentages you are from regions around the world. Very interesting stuff.
You know, this makes me, that you mentioned the DNA test, it makes me want to do that. I'd be very, because my heritage is supposed to be primarily French and English. It'd be interesting. You remember the Ku Klux Klan guy that had his done, and he was 14% Nigerian or something like that?
Good for him.
Yeah, really good. All right, so stay with us. When we get back, it's going to be time for Bill and his rant. You know that'll be good. We'll be back right after these words.
It's now time for me to rant right here. You know what really grinds my gears? Telephone etiquette, or lack thereof. I actually have to call out, my father on this one. Love you, Dad. But I gotta say, I worked for my dad for many years, and he's the type of guy that when the phone rings, regardless of what's going on, he answers it. And I know I'm just diming out my dad because I know he's always done this. But I know several other people that have done this before. You're in a meeting. You got several people going on. Phone rings. You answer it. You answer it, and you start having a conversation with that person while the meeting's on hold. No, that's what voicemail is for. Don't bring the phone into the meeting. Or if there's one on the desk, ignore it. Turn the ringer down, or at least send it to voicemail. You know, my brother, who's on the opposite end of the spectrum, he and I were having a discussion several years ago now. This is before everybody had only a cell phone and there were still house phones out there. There might be 7 or 8 of those still left in America today. I'm not sure. But I was trying to call him repeatedly, and I kept getting a busy signal. When I finally got through, I asked him if he was on a 3-way call. He said, no, he didn't have call waiting. And he explained to me he didn't have call waiting because he hated being on the phone and being put on hold while someone takes another phone call and goes on and has a conversation while the original person, who should take priority, mind you, is sitting on hold. So he didn't bother having call waiting. He figured they could call back. So I learned a valuable lesson with that because I can appreciate having been on the phone with someone and we're in the middle of an actual discussion, the reason that we're chatting, something of some form of importance. And you end up being told, oh, hey, you know, I got to call you back. So-and-so's calling. Click. It's like, wait a minute. Send them the voicemail. We're already talking. It got to the point when I was a customer service supervisor, I actually used to tell the people that would answer the phone if several calls came in. Let's say they had 4 calls. They'd answer the phone, hello, XYZ, please hold. Hello, XYZ, please hold. Hello, XYZ, please hold. Then get to the 4th and hello, XYZ, how can I help you? No. The right way to do is put them on hold. Go back to call 1. I'm sorry, how can I direct your call? However you would answer the phone. Go back to the person of priority. Now, for my 2 cents, if I'm on the phone and another call is coming in, one of 2 things is going to happen. One of 3 things is going to happen. They're either going to go straight to voicemail, if it's not that important. Or if the person I'm chatting with now, the conversation is wound down and we're just really filling time by talking about really nothing of any importance, I may then say, hey, you know, I've got another call coming in. I've been waiting on this person, whatever the case may be. Is it cool if we chat later? And I get this. I try to get their permission for it before I'd bring over. Or the other option is this. Hey, I've got a call coming in. I've been waiting on this. Hold on a second. I'm just going to take care of them. I'll get right back. And I do that. I'll answer the phone. Whoever's ringing in, hey, I'm on the other line. Let me finish that conversation. I'll call you back shortly. Okay? Good. And then I click off. If you are the person receiving that, here's your duty to say, sounds good. Call me back. Or, hey, I'm headed into a meeting. I'll let you know when I'm out. Something along that line. Respond to it, but don't say, hey, you know, it's real quick. Hey, you know, I wanted to call and ask your opinion. No. Someone else is obviously on the other line, or the person who answered your call is doing something. Respect that. Please respect that. Another thing is you are arriving. Some people that I talk to, I'll answer the phone, hey, this, that, and the other's going on, I got about 3 minutes. Based on the person I'm talking to, because this might be a run-on phone call based on the individual I'm chatting with. I know that they have run-on phone calls. I've got several people I talk to that if you don't have a definite end, it'll go forever. And I just don't have that kind of time. I don't have that kind of interest on staying on the phone that long. I really, really don't. Dave, how often do you and I actually spend on the phone? When we talk, how long are our conversations generally?
3 minutes?
Yeah, about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's because you're busy and I'm busy. You're getting your life handled. I'm getting my life handled. And our lives coincide on certain issues. What do you think? We probably handle 90% of it via text?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are usually pretty short, too.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, our phone calls are usually, if the text is going to get out of hand,
phone call.
It's much more, yeah, just make a phone call.
But something you said really keyed in. The people who rattle on, I have friends that I love, great guys,
okay,
like my brothers. And I only talk to them like once every 6 months because I cannot get on the phone with them. I have to be like, it's roughly what, an hour drive to Vegas? I have to be like on a drive to Vegas with no other business calls to make to talk to one of these guys, because there's no way, and I'm sure you have friends like this, there's no subtle way to get off the phone with them because they just go and go and go. And I hope none of them are watching this show. You know, sometimes it's like, it feels like I'm talking to like a high school girlfriend. You know, you remember how that was in high school? Get on the phone and all lovey-dovey when you're in like 10th grade. You know, you'd be on the phone for an hour if your parents let you be on the phone for an hour. And that's kind of how I feel like with these guys. Like, I love you. You're great. You're awesome. There could not be this much to talk about. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never really enjoyed talking on the phone all that much.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to one of my daughters on the phone on Saturday, and the conversation got to be so interesting. I was driving out to go eat, and I said, you know what, I got to the restaurant. Let me go in and eat. I'll call you back when I'm done. And as soon as I got back in the car, I called her back. And it was a very interesting phone call. But that's kind of few and far between. Yeah. Of course, enjoying that with one of your children is a joy.
Yes.
But I have a guy, he's a friend of mine, used to be a close friend of mine. You know who he is. And the thing is, though, is this guy ended up being a very, very difficult friend to have. Everybody knows this type of person where you have a friend that is so difficult to have, it is work. It's a struggle to keep them as a friend. Yeah. And this was during this time. At some point in time, it was, you know, 5 years ago or 4 years ago, something like that. I finally said, look, I can't do this with you anymore. Now, you literally take up about 2 hours of my day every day of the week.
Wow.
And it's always a struggle. And then I'm concerned about everything about that until the next time we talk. And just, I can't do it anymore. So it's, we haven't had a total separation, but it's been a massive difference
stepping
in communication.
Back.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I recall one time on a drive into Las Vegas, we were having a chat, and I just called up and said, hey, man, how's it going? And because he had sent me a text, I called when I was able to get signal, because there's a couple of dead spots. And that's all I said, hey, man, how's it going? And I didn't speak another word. My girlfriend's with me in the car. We're driving. 8 miles later, at the speed limit, it's about 9 minutes, right? The call dropped due to another dead zone, which takes about 3 minutes to drive through.
So I say, the call dropped and you went, yes!
Well, here's the deal. As soon as the signal came back, I hit redial, and he answered and goes, what happened? I didn't realize that the call dropped. When did it drop? What was I saying? And of course, I couldn't pay attention all along. I said, it just dropped. I called you right back, which meant for 3 minutes, he's talking to dead air.
Right.
But it had the same effect. And then it went on and on. And I drove for about another 4 or 5 miles, another dead spot that lasts for about 5 minutes. I called back after that.
Oh, you are a good man, Bill. I would have liked, the phone would have been off.
But the thing is literally he was talking the entire time. And of that time, there was a good 8 minutes of talking to dead air.
Oh, I know. I've been on your end, the receiving end of that. I've got to tell you a funny story. I used to have a little box. It was about the size of a paper pack of matches, but much thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on a little chain for keys, right? And on the face of it, it had, I think, six little tiny buttons. And they all made little sound effects. One was like a crying baby, something. And one of them was static. Okay, I kid you. So what I used to do is I'd be driving down the road and somebody be doing one of these monologues where they could care less that you're on the other end of the phone. It's just all about them, right? And so I'd have my phone. I'd start driving with my knees and I'd put this thing up there and shh, can you hear me? Shh, you know, and it'd be making the static noise. I'd be like, hello, hello, off.
You could get away with that with analog technology. With digital, it's a different story.
If I hadn't lost that thing, I'd still be doing it today.
You know, I actually saw a something years ago, and this is when, you know, before everybody had a cell phone all the time.
Yep.
But it was just crinkling up a sheet of paper near your home phone, and it sounded like static. And I kept a stack of paper near my phone regularly, and there's always a ball of it there. I'd pick it up off the desk, and I'd be crinkling in and out. And it's really.
Note to self.
Water in the line.
Note to self: put paper in my truck.
Well, but it's different now. Digital technology.
Oh, I don't care. Yeah. I'll fake it. No one knows.
Yeah, they will now. Look, Dave, it's not just you and me. America's watching.
Oh, it's even gonna be worse if you hear it someday.
Hey, Dave, how's it going? Oh, good. And I start. Is that?
That sound.
Let's see who does it to the other one first. It's funny though, because you and I, although our conversations are 3 minutes long, we'll literally talk on the phone maybe two or three times a month.
Oh, yeah.
It's usually during tech, and oftentimes, like, we could finish this show,
mm-hmm.
and we meet about an hour before we get to the studio. We have lunch, chat about some of the things of the show. We come here. We may not even talk before we meet for lunch next week. We just know what's going on.
Right, right.
So, and that's not unusual.
You know, and one of the joys for me about this show is because you're busy and I'm busy, there was a time when you and I didn't get much time to talk.
No.
And, you know, it was like we'd get together for dinner every now and again, and it was like, God, that was great, you know. And now, one of the wonderful things about this show is that we spend 45 minutes to an hour every single Wednesday before this show, and that's...
Yeah, I remember there's actually kind of a withdrawal thing. It was this last fall, I believe it mm-hmm. was, and we hadn't sat down for lunch in maybe 4 months.
Yeah.
It was a long time. We're like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's somebody else who shall remain nameless for the political reasons that in this town that you and I are both have a close relationship with. And, you know, we grab lunch with him whenever we can. And now that's gotten considerably more challenging.
It does. I want to try to just, as we're getting down to the last minute or so of this mm-hmm. segment, wrap it back up to a little bit of phone etiquette, is be considerate of everybody there. Everybody in society now is so me. I look out for number one. I'm so important. So when I want to talk, somebody needs to listen. It's not the case. Shut up and sit down and wait your turn. Have some etiquette. Look up etiquette. If you don't know that word, what is that word? E-T-T-I-Q-U-E. Etiquette. Look that word up. Do I spell it right?
I don't know.
Because I screwed up the math a couple weeks ago. But look it up, understand it, and please follow along and realize we all need to be there to help other folks out.
Mm-hmm.
Be of a benefit, not of a draw, especially when you're on the phone with somebody.
Good manners are just nothing more than a way of showing other people that we respect them.
And on top of that, they flourish. They are contagious.
Yes. And we'll be back.
Welcome back from the break. It is now time for us to go into our viewer email. And here's the email address for you to send your emails to the DaveAndBillShow@gmail.com. You can also go online and, you know, send this out, tweet it, spin cast it, whatever the hell these things are in social media. Spin cast. I had to, reserve that URL.
You should start a service.
Spin cast. Whatever it is. Go out there and put it out there. Our email, our web address, our URL is totallyunprepared.info. And you can go there. You can view our shows. You can listen to the audio of it. You can download the audio if you like. Go on to totally unprepared.info right here at the bottom of the screen.
We also do have a Facebook page. So if you're a big Facebook user, you can simply just search for Totally Unprepared and like our page. Every week we post the show that's just been completed. It takes us about 48 hours to get it ready. And then we post it to the Facebook page as well.
We do. It's on there. You'll find it on my page, Dave's page. We have a YouTube channel. It's there. All that good stuff.
We're making it as easy as possible to consume this content. How's that for some
for those who
talk,
are interested?
Consume the content.
So from our viewer email bag, we end up with a question by one of our viewers that asked, if we witnessed police abuse occurring against a citizen or citizens, to what involvement would we get, would we allow ourselves to be involved? What would we do?
And by abuse, Dan is referring to physical violence.
Yeah, somebody, say the cops are just kicking somebody's ass. And, you know, maybe you witness, you know, there's been cases where, you know, grandma is they're trying to pull her over in an unmarked car. So she calls on the phone to make sure that that's actually a cop. Mm-hmm. And it takes a couple miles of her driving before she gets an answer. And she pulls over and that cop starts pulling out his gun, yanking her out of the window and kicking her ass because he's upset. So something along this line, somebody walking out of a, say, out of a mall. And they fit the description and, you know, guns are drawn and these people start getting thrown around and getting their asses kicked. To what level would you
get
involved?
In this setup you just gave, coming out of the mall, the first thing that comes to mind for me is, and it's funny because the ethos today seems to be amongst cops definitely, and then amongst a certain genre of Americans, that when cops give you an order, follow it. And to me, not so much. Okay, and it's not that I wish to be problematic. It's that I have rights. And the fact that somebody is yelling something at me doesn't divest me of my rights. And if I'm a completely innocent person and I know I haven't done a damn thing, he's wrong. Right off the bat, if I'm innocent and he's pointing a gun at me, get on the ground, get on the ground. And I just walked out of the mall. Now, if there are six guys with guns pointed at me, I might get on the ground. But the point is, I know he's the one in the wrong. He's the one pointing a gun wrongfully at me. Okay? And if he doesn't have his gun out and he just starts poking his finger at me and giving me commands, and I'm as innocent as the day is long, that is not, there's not going to be just like instant compliance for to his wrongful conduct. Okay? That's my ethos, and some people disagree with that. So, having said that, in your example, the guy coming out of the mall, let's say he's got a little Dave Champion in him. And the cop starts yelling commands at him. And he's like, dude, I'm with my wife and my kids. I haven't done anything. You're talking to the wrong guy. And he starts to walk away. Okay? And so here they come and they pounce on him and they do the gang thing. Now, you and I know there's legitimate use of force. Okay? Even if they've got the wrong guy. Okay? If they think they've got the right guy, there's legitimate use of force. Okay? And we, for those people who care to look at them, there are minimum hundreds, possibly thousands, of police violent abuse videos every week now, okay, with the proliferation of cell phone cameras and so forth. So Dan's question is, we see something, you or I, especially with our frame of reference, that we can actually look at that and judge it legally. We're seeing an abuse of force, and we recognize it for exactly what it is. This guy, they're not trying to handcuff this guy. That may be the goal down the road, but what they're trying to do right now is they are trying to whoop his ass.
You know, I have to tell you something. I have a friend of mine, personal mm-hmm. friend of mine, that I met through a few other friends mm-hmm. that we all hang in the same group. And the way that my other friends met this guy mm-hmm. was one of them, with a couple of his friends, were in a car. They got pulled over by our county sheriff's department a couple, 2-3 years ago. They got pulled over. And the police presence involved in this pullover was ridiculous. These folks, they were at a local casino. They had a disagreement with a security officer that was there. The security officer got flipped off and told where to go. And then they decided, you know what, and the security officer said, well, I'm calling county sheriff's. Okay, fine. So they got up, they got in their car, and they left. Okay? So it was a trespass issue at that point. No laws being broke. Trespass issue.
And they've left.
And they've left.
Issue over.
Miles down the highway and on another road, they get caught up with by the county sheriffs, and now like 3 or 4 cars are all looking for this vehicle. Who knows what the casino security said. So they all pull him over. They're separating everybody in the car, and the deputies are being very aggressive. So this new friend, the way that we end up meeting him is he notices this. He's on his way home from his job. He works a late shift. Mm-hmm. And he stops, pulls over, gets out his video camera, and from a distance starts videotaping everything.
Good for him.
And as the cops are noticing that he's videotaping, he, you know, casually starts moving in a little bit closer, trying to get cops' names and things off of their ID badges and such as that, and did the right thing. From there, after everything was cool, cops left, they started chatting. This guy is now a friend of the group.
Oh.
And this is how we ended up meeting. He didn't get involved, but this guy also carries a gun all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, good guy. Well, so to what level was he going to get involved? I think he did it right the right way. He was a good witness. He talked with the people that were there. And if something came up later, he had video evidence.
But there wasn't immediate ongoing violence.
No.
And that is where I worry about.
And what I believe,
for me,
based on the information I have from my friends who were involved in this, mm-hmm. had he not showed up with his video camera, the violence by way of the overbearing deputies mm-hmm. In his opinion, was quite possibly imminent, yeah. The way things were going downhill.
You know, I've thought about this as video has allowed us to see so much illegal and needless police violence.
Body cams.
But yeah. I don't want to say worry about it. Let's say I ponder it because I know me. I am not capable of standing there watching a guy take an unjustified illegal ass whooping, no matter who's given the whooping.
I'm with you. I'm a little concerned about that myself. Like, I could stand there filming this whole thing, but
I couldn't.
If it got out of control
yeah.
and the cop just really was wrong about this. Now, and keep in mind, generally, when a cop goes out of control with this sort of thing and induces that kind of violence, it's generally because he has plenty of backup to get away with it.
Yeah.
Because people like you and I are not going to get involved if it's him doing this violence and there's seven other cops around, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. we might if there's him and maybe another cop. That's I think it's one of these things where it's safety in numbers. I'm going to get away with kicking this guy's ass.
You know, part of my concern, leaving aside having 12 of them there, let's say it's just two cops and they're clearly just beating somebody. The attempt to take them into custody, to put handcuffs on them, clearly that is not the agenda. If they wanted to do that, they could have already done that, and I see that. They have another agenda. The problem is they're armed, and so am I.
Right.
Which means if I make an approach, it has to take into account that they may attempt deadly force against me. Which means my style of approach can't just be, hey, man, get off of him. Okay? Because police officers believe that if they can't take me, if that's a crime, if they want to call that a crime for trying to defend an innocent party, if they consider that a crime, they have a right to, as you well know, to elevate the use of force up to and including
shoot me. They have the authority, not the right. They have the authority.
Okay, the authority.
Yeah.
Well, they perceive it as a right. Okay.
We'll talk about that on another segment.
Right. they have the training that says they can escalate force up to and including killing me if in order to take me into custody. Okay. So understanding when I lay hands on them that dynamic just went into effect, that they can now escalate in their minds, they can escalate the force against me to any level they want up to and including taking my life. Simply putting my hands on them, because you can tell I've thought this through, simply putting my hands on them seems unwise. It almost seems like the approach has to be off of him now, on the ground. Because that's the only way to protect me from being killed by them.
And at that time, what would you need to do? You would need to also secure their handcuffs and put them in custody and tell them, you're under arrest.
Right.
And
take their radio and call their supervisor. Yeah,
and that turns into a big deal. Imagine if you physically took a cop.
At gunpoint.
At gunpoint, into custody mm-hmm. for a true law violation. But then, who do you turn him over to? His same people.
Right.
Right. Or you got to call and ask, say, if it was local city or county, you'd want to say, hey, I need the state police to my location immediately. Not local, not county. I need the state police and advise your watch commander to come out as well.
And that's presuming they would be any better about it.
Right. And so
the brotherhood seems to span agencies.
Yeah. And keep in mind the female Florida Highway Patrol deputy that Highway Patrol trooper, I guess it would be, that pulled over a Miami-Dade off-duty cop who was in his uniform in his marked car driving 100 miles an hour north on the freeway up Interstate 5.
In heavy traffic,
yeah. And pulled him over. He was late for his off-duty job. And she arrested him. And she got all kinds of hell from this, from cops all over the region, had to be transferred. Because they're like, oh, you don't do that to another cop.
Oh.
I cry BS.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
why body cams are so important. And on top of that, I think we've talked about it on this show. I've mentioned before the whole audacity of the industry of policing to be so heavy-handed would come to an immediate end if all cops stopped other cops at the time that they started to cross the line in any given situation.
On my show, I covered Albuquerque PD. An officer there got won $1 million judgment against the department because other officers threatened his life because he testified against, not even within his own agency, the guy of an adjoining agency who had mistreated, remember Al Unser,
yep.
the racer, who was in his 70s? Another officer from another department had physically abused Al Unser illegally. This officer testified against it, and his officers, some of the officers in his own department, threatened his life.
And my response to this, without mincing any words, those cops that did the life-threatening that believe in this whole secured brotherhood, you need to wash your mouth out with buckshot.
There you go.
You don't belong with the uniform, and your ass should be on the street as a bum. My two cents. Dave, good show.
All right, brother.
Folks, stick around.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.